Yep, Pat, I'm still in here. How you doing? N2IRJ here, and Vic's going to meet me here in a couple minutes, over.
Okay,
that's great. Turns out that I stayed up the entire night, and I called for 4 hours, and it wasn't until about 5 in the morning that finally a man came back to me from Long Island, and I ended up chatting with him, and then his net started for 2 hours. It was called the Great Internet. And I was giving him a 25 over. It's about 77 miles away from here. And then I started talking to other people, and I looked on QRZ, MapWise, and discovered that it formed a line going from, I'd say, Charlotte, North Carolina to Maine. And I know that there's no way my antenna could really be that directional, to be like a laser beam. But nonetheless, that's exactly what I witnessed. I mean, every person that spoke with me and gave a signal report was somewhere along that line, over.
Yeah, I just think that conditions, Marty. I wouldn't be overly concerned about that.
Yeah, it's not even a concern. It was just a, observation, which I know is false. I mean, I heard a few other people in there. Like, I heard a guy from Ottawa, where he was in Canada, specifically in Ottawa, I don't know. Maybe the city. But he never gave me a signal report, so I don't know how he was hearing me. That's great. That's just the way I want it. Well, my fan hasn't started up yet, but once it starts up, you will hear a little bit of whining. But eventually, we could come up with a solution for that. The high-speed switch is now sticking. If it gets on, it won't shut off unless I shut the radio off for a while and let it cool down.
WCR.
I'm running, according to the amplifier, 300 watts on peaks, and I just heard Vic come in. Okay, see you, Pat. Vic, hello, radio. This is an historic occasion. After 22 years of being here, and depending upon first the 500 feet long dipole at 30 feet, and then the vertical antenna for 20 years, I've now made a new LibertyNet antenna. So here we are, the two supposed big signals of the LibertyNet, finally conversing for the first time. Over.
Roger. It sounds louder than the previous antenna. Can you switch antennas?
I was afraid you'd ask. It turns out that you mentioned that clear back in the beginning when I was making it, and I'm really making this premature, this radio test with you. I don't have the ability to do that just yet, but don't worry, I will. The connection point isn't in the ham shack, it's in the basement, and it turns out that I, first of all, need an A-B switch, and secondarily, I need a two-way radio to tell Laura to make the switch. I can't do it myself even. Or, three, I need to get a remote switch and then remotely switch it, and then we could do a true A-B comparison. Over.
Okay, whatever. It sounds like a very complicated way to make a comparison. This is W1WCR.
I know, you're right, it is. But I wanted to get on the air with you early, so before I had everything perfect, I figured it would be fun to do this test, and here we are doing it. And, of course, your signal is the usual powerful amount. Were you tuning up a little bit ago, like maybe 10 minutes ago?
No, I wasn't. I just slipped her on. All the settings are where they were on the net, so I figured that it would be okay, and all the meters are reading reasonably, so everything is okay. And my initial impression of the new antenna is that it puts out a stronger signal than the previous one.
Well, that's what the modeling suggested, that for you at least, that would be the case. I'm hoping that it's everywhere. I'd really be happy if I found out that in 7-land and 6-land, they heard me equally well or better. But locally, yes, it definitely should be better. And it is, even though you don't have an A-B switch comparison. Also, the band isn't fully formed yet. You're hearing me not at my best, because I can tell you even are not at your best. For example, right now, you're a 5 over S9, and on some Liberty Nets, in history, you've actually made it 60 over. So that shows you how much potential headroom there is to increase. Over.
Okay, so I guess the band is not quite up to snuff, but in spite of that, I think your signal now is louder than it was on the last net.
That's good news, and I'm happy to hear that, and a lot of people in the East ought to be pleased. I only had one QSO before this, and it was about 5 o'clock this morning. I was calling on this frequency for about 4 hours last night, and nobody would come back to me. It was unbelievable. Of course, the static was really high, too, so that might have had something to do with it. But finally, the graveyard net control operator, net control guy, he came on, and he chatted with me briefly. He's located about 77 miles northeast of me. He's in Long Island, that area, kind of. And the subsequent stations that broke in on the net were all in a line that extended from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I guess ultimately ended up going through the center of, I think it's Alabama or Georgia, I forget which state there. It's a solid line from where I am to Charlotte down through there. And then the line extended all the way up through your direction into Maine. And it was like an unbelievable coincidence that out of all these stations that they were located along this line, the guy who deviated the furthest was a guy in the Adirondacks, which is still pretty much along that line. Now, in reality, let's face it, I know that my antenna can't be that directional, like a laser beam. I mean, even if it were up at its proper elevation, it couldn't be that good. But that's how conditions were this morning, kind of. And speaking of elevation, it's not up to where I want it to be. My trees are smaller than yours, so the maximum height we could make it is 60 feet. And for now, we got it up to 40 feet, and that wasn't even easy. But maybe later in the summer or something, we could get it up further. It turns out that I was helped by two really good friends, and actually they did the work, and I watched. And thank God for it. And I'll describe the antenna to you. I think it's like what you have, I think, or maybe I guess slightly different, but pretty much the same. We call it a DLD, our phraseology, it's a double L doublet. Yeah. And essentially, if you think of two letter L's inverted, it looks like that. The only additional thing is, due to property line restrictions, I ran out of room, so the ends of that L had to droop down. Normally they would hang vertically, and according to the antenna modeling program, that's not a problem. It actually improved my low angle radiation, which is what I wanted to do. But unfortunately, since the antenna is only 40 feet instead of 60, those wires touched the ground. So what we had to do is angle them at about 45 degrees. So that changed the pattern some in a way that's not as desirable, but it only hurt in theory by about 1.5 dB according to the modeling program. So again, this antenna is going to just get better as time goes on. Over.
Okay, very good. I don't understand this double L doublet configuration. However, you'll have to give me a Peter Rabbit type story on it.
Okay, well, first just consider a conventional dipole, and we'll just say that the ends of the dipole are too long to fit on the property line, so the last 50 feet on each side are left to just droop straight down to the ground. Over.
Oh, okay, I see. So you're moving the current maximum away from the center of the feed point. Is that it?
That's correct. It turns out that I deliberately made the antenna to be non-resonant and different than what some of my close advisors suggested that I do, but there was a reason for it. It had to do with a conversation I had with you about 20 years ago, and it involved your design, and I realized that in my system, it's unnecessary to be this concerned about I squared R losses. However, I wanted to maximize everything possible for operation on this frequency or thereabouts for the LibertyNet. So I decided that the largest inefficiency point was going to be my antenna tuner. So if I had a lot of current going through it, there would be more I squared R losses, you know, more heating, more resistive heating. So what I did is I designed the antenna so that at my tuner, it would be a voltage point. And my theory was that by doing so, I would decrease the I squared R losses, and I would have improved performance. At least I think that's what our discussion was 20 years ago. Maybe I got it wrong, but to make a long story short, on some bands, certain frequencies, I might see 3 amps of current going out each ladder line feeder. On this band, I could run a kilowatt. Likewise, and the gauges are staying at zero. And according to the antenna model, it's only putting out something like 0.12 amps. So it's really neat how reality corresponded to the model. The model also predicted that it would be approximately 50 ohms resistive with almost no reactance at 2.28 megacycles. And we find that that in reality occurs at around 2.200. Over.
Okay, very good. That implies that each side of the antenna has considerably more than a quarter wave of wire.
Yeah, that's true. It's a little bit shorter than yours. Instead of it being 5/8 wave on each side, which is what I originally wanted, I ended up making it, I think, 10 feet shorter. I think it's 150 on each side, and that makes a total length of 300. And then what I did is I bought 2 spools of wire, each 500 feet in length, and I made it in an unbroken fashion. instead of using the usual method of making sort of like a dipole and then soldering on your feed line, I simply made it all one run. The antenna, and then it went through the center feed point and turned into ladder line, homemade spreaders. Let me put it this way. It's a homemade ladder line with commercially bought spreaders. And brought that into the house. It's about 350 feet away from the house. So I no longer have the RFI problem that I did for so many years. My vertical antenna was right outside the window almost. So that used to be very, very bad. And now it's to the other extreme. It's far away. So if anything, I'm incurring loss due to the length. But calculating it with a velocity factor of 0.97, it's about 550 ohms. The feeder system, we come up with losses that are very acceptable. It's similar to what my vertical antenna is, being 10 times closer. Over.
Okay, very good. Actually, your antenna is much longer than mine. This antenna that I'm running now is only 165 feet.
Oh, in total length, you mean?
That's right.
I didn't know that. I thought that each leg was 165 feet.
No, that's the total length.
Come on in, Pat.
Hi, Pat. Yes, the dipole here is 165 feet, and of course it's fed at the center with open wire line.
Okay, yeah, I'm just curious. I think we're going to do something bigger than that. You got a much bigger antenna. How are you copying me, Rick?
I'm copying you pretty well. It's not as strong as Marty, but you're above the static. I'd say that you're about maybe 10 dB above the static here.
That's what the rig will do here, peak.
Okay, that made quite an improvement.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah, I'm running 160 meter view here. The flat pops up, but it's about 160 feet long along the top there, and then the ends drop down, and it's up. The ends are up close to 100 feet, and the center's down at about 70.
Yes, I wish I still had my inverted U. That was an excellent antenna on 160 meters.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I use this on all the low bands, and it works out real well. But I'll tell you, the best antenna I had up, Vic, was a 500-foot rectangle between the two towers.
Yes, it sounds like it would really put out a blowtorch of a signal. And that was, what was that, mounted on towers?
Yeah, I got two towers there. One's 105 feet and the other one's about 95 feet.
Yeah, so I don't have towers here. I've got 100-foot trees that help me out quite a bit.
Yeah, it's cheaper too.
Yeah, and the maintenance is fairly low. Now the killer here is the ice storms. Man, when we have an ice storm, it's devastation around here.
Yeah, I talked to a guy up in New Hampshire there once in a while. He was telling me about this. He's always fixing the antennas there after the ice storms.
That's not just the antennas, it's the trees that are destroyed by these storms.
Yeah, I've seen some. I mean, we had some here too. I had a couple of pine trees here, like Christmas trees in the front here, and that last snow and ice we had there was so heavy that it was so bad I had to cut them down.
Roger, roger.
Yeah, go ahead, Marty. I don't want to take it up there. I just want to say hello to Vic and see if this junk's working.
Oh, I hope you stay with us, Pat. and I want to say that when you put your power up, it was a true 10 dB increase. You really did go from 20 to 200 per the meter. It was exactly 10 dB. I couldn't believe it. You were giving me 5 over S9, and then you went to 15 over. And by the way, Vic's signal picked up. He originally was a 5 over S9 when we began our QSO, and now he's up to a 15, so the band is forming better. What kind of signal level are we giving you, Vic, and what kind of noise floor do you have? Over.
Just a moment. Stay quiet for a second. Let me check the noise. Yeah, the noise here is between S3 and S5, and I estimate that you must be at least 30 dB above that.
That's pretty respectable then, because I calculate things the same way. And when I do these LibertyNet recordings, I make the recordings in a similar fashion. I have a special high-quality professional recording device made by Lucid Digital to Analog Converter. It has a gauge on it which goes from negative 42 to 0 dB, and I can tell you know, what the ratio is. And when you talk on a good night, I've seen you already make it almost a 40 dB signal-to-noise ratio in terms of quieting. Now, this is momentary, of course. My AGC is cutting you back, which is really neat. But I have it on the slow setting, so it'll stay there for about a second and a half, and then it starts to recover, and the noise starts coming up. But if you just listen to your voice in between syllables, you'll actually go down to like a negative 38, and then on your peaks, you'll be like a negative 2. So that's 36 dB of signal-to-noise ratio, and that is not easy to achieve on amateur radio. As for the signal on your end, my gauge is showing a low noise floor of S6 with static crashes going as high as 8.5, and like I said, you went up to a 15 over, so I guess you can sort of figure in your head what your ratio is. Over.
Base 45 over here, Mike.
No kidding. Well, you know what, I'm listening on a different antenna.
Yeah, no, I know, but I mean, he's 45 over 9 here, he's got a nice signal.
You hear that, Vic, what you really are on a regular antenna?
Yes, I sort of semi-understand.
Well, it turns out that Vic is, Pat is listening to you on the same antenna that he's transmitting with, whereas I'm listening to you on a beverage antenna, a W1WCR beverage, no less, and it's not pointed in a direction to be favorable to you. It's pointed westward, so you're actually in the null, and even with all that working against you, you're still as strong as you are. If I were listening to you with my DLD directly, I'd probably be getting you a 45 over as well. Pat and I have the same radio. Maybe I'd even have you better. I can't do that right now because of my limitations. I have more than one problem. Besides no AB switch, the transmit-receive relay is out of my amplifier, so I can't receive backwards to the antenna that I'm transmitting from. So sorry about all of these faults, but over the course of the year, I hope to get them all fixed. Maybe with Pat's help, hi. N2IRJ.
Okay, your antenna sounds like an excellent design because it looks to me like your maximum current points on each side are quite a ways apart. They're like 120 feet or something like that apart, approximately, which should give you a small amount of gain. It should approach maybe two half waves in phase. Maybe not quite as much gain as two half waves in phase, but should deliver some gain. The next question is, what's the orientation?
The orientation is north, north, west, and south, southeast. So this ends up, or do I have that slightly cocked the wrong direction? I think I might have that. Well, here's the story. It turns out that when you superimpose the predicted beam pattern over a map, the null, in theory, would fall over Hudson Bay in Canada, and the other null of the antenna would fall over Puerto Rico and a little bit off to the right of Puerto Rico towards Africa, where nobody is anyway. Over.
Yes, there aren't too many ships at sea listening in to amateur radio in that part of the world, so that's a good place for a null.
Yeah, we deliberately took pains to make it that way, even though I realize its directivity is not going to be, like I mentioned before, a laser beam. At least if there's a little bit, it'll, you know, benefit us that way, and it will also get better once we raise it up to its design height.
Yes, now the problem is to find the right fertilizer for the trees so that you can do that.
That's funny. Yeah, that's right. And wait another 20 years.
Yes, well, it's bad enough to have time elapse like that, but it's also good to make use of it.
Yeah, believe it or not, many of the trees here that are quite large today, they weren't in existence when I first started this place. A few years went by, and they weren't even alive yet. And then an acorn hatched, and the rest is history. I mean, some of these trees are 25 feet, and they've only been alive for maybe 18 years. The trees that I used to have in my whole backyard were lower than my vertical antenna that I made back then for the LibertyNet. My LibertyNet antenna was maybe, I'm guessing, 6 feet lower than they were at the time. And over a course of 20 years, the trees grew, and they are now about 12 feet above the LibertyNet antenna over a 20-year span. So it seems like roughly a foot a year, maybe, those trees grow. Over?
Yes, yes, it's amazing how time lapses, and suddenly your trees are enormous. I know we've got a big maple tree in our front yard here, and when I planted that thing, it was the trunk diameter was like about a half an inch, and now it's like 1.5 feet.
Wow, now that would give me a lot of satisfaction. Did you plant that back in the early 60s or when?
Yes, it was, I'd say it was around 1958 or 9 or something like that. So it's had plenty of time to grow. It's over 50 years old.
That is really neat. That's beautiful. Unfortunately, you know, my Haitian neighbor, what he likes to do, he likes to kill trees, and he's cut down so many on his property, the last of which, as you know, tore down two of my important antennas, and the 40-meter spherical nullen is going to be really hard to get fixed, and that's going to take a long time. But luckily, I got the beverage antenna fixed before the LibertyNet. It was so funny. You should have seen it. It was hanging about, I don't know, maybe 17 feet in the air, that bucket. It's a huge tail. It's like about three of those 5-gallon buckets put together, and it's made by Rubbermaid. It's rectangular in shape. And anyway, that's what houses all of my components. Normally, there's a preamplifier in there, there's an antenna tuner, there's a special
bypass filter that was custom made for the LibertyNet by a professional corporation that specializes in that. It has a cut at 3930 kilocycles, and by the time you get down to the 80 meter band, it has about 40 dB of attenuation. It's an elliptical filter with many poles, and after a little bit more, by the time you're down in the broadcast band, even before then, you're down 100 dB. So it's far, far, far superior to any filter that comes with any typical preamplifier that you would buy. You know, they usually put some kind of mild filtering in, maybe 20 dB at most, and there you have to go many octaves to have it kick in, you know, and broadcast stations can still make it through. And like I said, I live between two good radio stations, Pat and another friend, and, you know, we don't bother each other, and it's because of each station having good design. Over.
Roger, roger. Yeah, it pays to have good isolation frequency-wise. Spatial isolation helps, but with a sharp filter like that, you can really clean things up.
Yeah, and to IRJ, I used to get, with my vertical antenna, a certain AM station come through, would leak through. It would, on my current radio, which is a big one, the FT1000D, it would come through on voice peaks. When you would be talking, for example, I would hear this scratchiness, and I would hear this station coming through on peaks just ever so momentarily. Now, if I hooked up my little radio, my FT100, it's just a tiny mobile radio, that thing would get completely overloaded. I mean, it would absolutely not work. I mean, I'll tell you where it really didn't work, on 160. When I put that thing on 160, I could go up or down the band with my vertical antenna, and I would simply get radio stations. It was terrible. I took my FT1000D, this big radio that has much better filtering, into the antenna, and these 160 were not having that problem. But there's nothing I could do. That FT100D was just too tiny, and it didn't have the filtering internally. And with that vertical antenna, the polarization being the same as the local stations, forget it. Now, I could get away with it if I used the dipole, but not the vertical antenna. So polarization really mattered.
Oh, yes. The broadcast stations are pretty much strictly vertically polarized, especially in the daytime when there's no sky wave. They are solidly vertically polarized. So it's important to have a receiving antenna that's maybe cross-polarized with respect to that type of station. And, of course, the diverge antenna being horizontal gives you exact cross-polarization in the broadside direction, although along the run of the antenna, the broadcast signal will still generate quite a signal on the beverage.
I see. Well, speaking of beverages, you're using that system as well, and you seem to have a lower noise floor than I. And I've always heard people say just how low beverages are that way. And as far as I can tell, everything is working correctly in mine, but for some reason I seem to have a higher noise floor. I don't know what to think of that. It seems like it's hearing in the right direction, and it's nulling in the right direction, but maybe I could still fine-tune it further. Maybe it should be quieter than it is. I don't know.
Yes, it's hard to know. I don't know what generates the noise. If it's normal atmospheric noise, you're at a lower latitude than I am, so it may be that generates more static-type interference. I shouldn't think it would be terribly large difference. And incidentally, I've been using my short beverage because my long beverage got demolished in one of the ice storms. And I never put it back up again because the short beverage seems to do a pretty good job.
Yeah, well, didn't you do calculations? You did, that's right, years ago, showing that the old theories about beverages being super long, it actually started working against you after, I don't know, was it 1.8 wavelengths or something like that?
Yes, that's true. Once the length goes beyond a certain amount, the extra length doesn't really contribute to the output signal particularly, because the spatial wave overruns the wave on the wire by more than 90 degrees, and when it does that, it begins to subtract from the signal.
See, down here, the people still think the longer the better, and they'll make them 1,000 feet long, and I tried saying that you came up with formula to show that after a certain point, it can start having the effect you just described. So that's why I was satisfied with making my beverage a mere 1.25 approximately wavelengths on the LibertyNet frequency.
Yes, yes, well, you don't even need formulas to understand what happens. The space wave is traveling at the velocity of light, but the wave on the wire is slower than the velocity of light, and also the space wave is impinging on the antenna at an angle, so that the phase velocity along the wire is probably faster than the speed of light, and therefore that wave overtakes the wave on the wire, and once it overtakes it by more than 90 degrees, it will actually subtract from the signal.
Well, that's why you deserve credit for having literally written a book on beverage antennas.
Got a break?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Vic, did you ever try, I mean, if you're looking at a beverage on 80 meters, it's what, 260 feet, somewhere around that for a full wavelength. Have you ever tried phasing, too, in a polynomial affair? I don't know if I pronounced that right or not. Where you take the second beverage, in other words, you pull your first beverage out, and where that ends, you bring another one out from there in the same direction, but a quarter wave apart, and run them end fire. Have you ever done that?
No, I have never done that. I don't have enough space really to try that. Although I may try that with the shorter beverage, just to see whether it will give me some extra oomph in either direction. An advantage of that would be that you could switch the phasing so that you could go in one direction or in the opposite direction.
Well, you can actually take a system like that and steer it 180 degrees. You know, if you have them both terminated in the same direction, where you have one, say even a quarter wave long pointing to the north, and then a quarter wave apart from that, starting at the feed line of the first one, you know, that back that far, and running another one. And then you could you can actually steer them. You're right. If you make a steering tuning network up there, you just run equal lengths of coax to it, and that'll steer 180 degrees. That works great.
Roger, Roger. I've tried a lot of different configurations, and it's very difficult to get any kind of an improvement over the original beverage design, in my opinion. But certainly, if you can, if you have enough space to phase a couple of them, that can only improve things.
Yeah, right. And you're absolutely right. More than two wavelengths is useless on for beverages and horizontal antennas above the ground, because you lose reflection and all that. But if you ever get a chance, try it out with two short beverages. You get a tremendous amount of gain out of it. And I mean, if you just use them end fire, you know, you get the gain, and the noise floor is pretty low.
Roger, Roger.
Yeah, he knew somebody, I think, from Princeton who did that, a contester maybe, or was it the man who started INRAD or something, over?
No, I used to be his tech, George Cutsadrigia. I used to be his technician at Plasma Physics, but no, there was, what the heck was his call now? He had the record there on 160, yeah, I worked with him too. Yeah, he actually came up with that that method with the beverages, and they were fantastic. That guy used to sit there and work questions on 160, and I couldn't even hear him. He was on call-ups.
Wow, I wish I had a lot of property too. It would be really neat. He told me about that design a while ago, and I never got around to telling Vic about it. I'm glad you got to tell him directly.
Yeah, no, that works really well. He came out. I think they did a big write-up about that system too, and then it fell by the wayside. But you know what Vic is saying is right. Is once you start going over a wavelength there, and that not only you start to lose the effectiveness of the beverage itself, but you narrow the beamwidth of the incoming signal. So it's usable in that pinpoint direction. The longer you make it, the narrower the beamwidth gets, and that kind of screws you up. You want it to be, anywhere from 60 to 90 degrees broad anyway, with, one direction and have the rejection off the back and all that baloney, but that really works well.
Yeah, turns out that my gauge is showing higher, and I'm thinking, now how could the band be changing between us? And then I heard a little hint in the background. Is there a little bit of help, I think? You're up to about a 25 over now.
Yeah, I turned the amplifier on. I'm around about a kilowatt right now.
Okay, Vic, that should make us more alike. Can you tell a difference now? Pat is running amplification.
Go ahead, say something, Pat.
Yeah, okay, Vic. Yeah, I'm running about, 1 kW here at peak right now.
Okay, you're very close to Marty. I'd say Marty has about 3 dB on you right now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, it could be the antenna or whatever else he's running there. But no, I know the antenna here works pretty good. I got to change the feed line, though. I got that garbage 450-ohm line on there, which isn't worth a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah, it turns out that Pat has a really neat system where his tower is far away, so he has the advantages of height and distance, but without loss, because underground he has this huge military-grade coax hardline buried, and it has almost no loss, so ordinary people can't do that, but he did it, and man, it's amazing. He could tell you about it. Also, Pat, I think I've already told you this before, but Vic knew Harold Beveridge. He even has a letter of his on his website posted.
Yeah, that's neat. I never met the guy there, but he was a pretty sharp guy there with all the stuff I read about the antennas and stuff like that. But I was really intrigued with that, and when I actually listened to it, I couldn't believe how well that phased pair worked. And he had them in a circle. He had 18 acres, I think, up in Kingston there, outside of Princeton, and he had them in a circle. And he used to just rotate the switch every time he made a call, and it was pile-ups every time he switched it.
Just a new pile-up for each switch position.
That's about right, Vic. I mean, it was unbelievable. I remember when I used to run the 160 contest from here, I had some low short receive antennas, but I got on one frequency, and he was a heck of an operator, too. He would call CQ on one frequency, say he's listening there, and another one, he'd listen to two frequencies at once. And he would just rotate that switch, and wherever he stopped, he had a pile-up, and that one night there, he missed the work. Without exaggeration, it probably worked 30 or 40 Russians, and I couldn't hear one of them.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, he had the record since 85, I think. Manny just took the record over last year, I believe, Marty.
Yeah, that's who I was speaking about before, Vic. Manny is the other person that I live between. Two famous hams. There's Pat and there's Manny.
Yeah, man, he's double E2MF. And it's amazing that of all the people I got to live by, I get to live by the man who holds the world's record on 160 meter contesting record.
Yes, it's amazing. Probably it's because in your area the drinking water is free of fluoride.
Yeah. No, there is something maybe about the water table here. We don't know what it is, but signals for ham radios seem to launch better from Jackson, New Jersey. I don't know. What do you say, Pat?
Well, I think the water's got a lot of contaminants in it there, and it makes for a good ground. But the system is what does it there. He's got a 130-foot tower, and we have six slopers coming off of that that he can switch individually, and then put them all together in phase pairs, and that's a big increase when, you know, if you're listening to anything overseas. Works out pretty well for him. Not very good close in, but it's great going out.
Yeah. I don't know if you could explain that system to Vic or not, if it's on the spur of the moment, he could come up with some answer, but it sort of defies logic as to why it works better with them all firing instead of the way you would think, having, you know, one be a reflector and another as a director and so forth.
Yeah, well, the only thing I could see, Marty, it's acting as phase pairs, you know, in multiple directions, because all the feed lines come back to the tower, they're all exactly the same length, and then they're all put together there when they're all fired there through a, you know, through a network. And you wind up with phase pairs in four different directions or six different directions, and I think that's what does it.
It sounds like sort of a miniature Wollenweber array.
I don't know what that means, but people have called it the bug whacker occasionally, but no, it works pretty well, Vic. I was impressed. I was listening to one of those receivers, you know, one of those European receivers that they have on the net. And I said, yeah, just for a test, I says, run the northeast vertical and then switch them all in. And it was a 10 dB increase. It was unbelievable.
Yes, it's just a matter of phasing. If you have a bunch of random antennas and you phase them so that the signal from each antenna arrives in phase at your receiver, you're bound to pick up some gain.
Yeah, right. And I think what's happening with that system there, it's probably like a six-legged clover leaf, if you know what I mean, when he fires them all, you know.
Roger, roger.
And then we shut the tower on 80 meters, and I think that thing's unbelievable. That thing works. We have force 12 there, single element 80 meter rotatable dipole up at almost 140 feet. And the tower just kills it. I mean, compared to the M squared job, the M squared's a dummy load. The tower's just unreal. It's running as halfway then fed, it really works out nice.
Roger, roger. Roger, roger. The Wollenweber is a antenna array that consists of radial half rhombics, and I think the spacing is like every 5 degrees or something like that. So you've got 360 degree coverage, and you can listen in many directions simultaneously.
Yeah, how many acres do you need to put that on 160 there, Vic?
Oh, geez. It must be around 20 acres or so.
Yeah, that's definitely not doable here anyway. Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. I'll have to look that one up.
Yes, it's one of the classical antennas that's been around for a long time, and I imagine you can find quite a bit of info on it on the Internet.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that. That is an interesting antenna. I always like the rhombics too. They work out pretty well. But unfortunately, maybe get a good one up here on 10 or 15 meters. I don't know about 160 though.
Right.
Supposedly, over at Fort Monmouth, their amateur radio club has a rhombic, and it's positioned, I think, towards Africa or something, and they get on there with one call, and people tell me it sounds like you're on a VHF repeater or something. It's so clear and so strong and so precise and so reliable, so positive reliability.
Yeah, that's so what the lasers. I've seen that whole setup. They got a big, they, matter of fact, they got a pair of log periodics to cover 6032.
Double.
I said in Princeton, you mentioned it was actually an outskirt, not the outskirts of Princeton, but that general area there, maybe I should ask Vic for the rough spelling, not to put you on the spot, Vic, but so maybe we could look it up on the internet.
Yes, I have a rough idea. W-U-L-L-E-N-W-E-B-E-R. Wollenweber.
That's a good Polish name, isn't it?
Yes. West Polish.
Direct connection there because they had a base there, but that thing works gangbusters in New York.
Okay, so you know about it already.
Yeah, I was there a couple times.
Yeah, I was there too, but I never got to listen to it.
Yeah, they had all the old Collins S line in there and some newer equipment, but they didn't find the Collins stuff. But I think they stripped that stuff. I don't even know if that club is still there now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, that was one heck of a station over there.
Hey, what we're talking about, Vic, is a military base. And they used to have a ham radio club there on the military base, and the military guys stopped at nothing. They could get telephone poles that were four times higher than the regular ones the public sees, and they just put these wires up super high and super long, and man, it really all came together well.
Yeah, so I remember visiting the RCA communications station on Cape Cod. They had acres and acres and acres of antenna, and most of it over marshland adjacent to the ocean, and they fed everything with 600 ohm open wire line, and they had all sorts of curtain arrays and all sorts of amazing antennas all set up on telephone poles, very tall telephone poles, and one of the things that plagued them was the woodpeckers would peck holes through the telephone poles, and there would be woodpecker holes that would go all the way through the telephone pole, and you'd be looking at an antenna there, and suddenly you would see a woodpecker stick his head out of a hole in the pole. They also used doubly folded dipoles because the input impedance of a doubly folded dipole is 600 ohms. And so for some of their lower power transmitters, they had transmitters like 15 kilowatts and I think several that were a lot stronger than that. But they had buildings full of transmitters.
Wow.
You know what they got right down the shore, Marty, there? They got AT&T long line transmitter antenna farm over there in, I think it's in Korea. That's on the marsh over there. You got to see that. Some log periodics and disc cones. I mean, huge disc cones. You know, that'll cover 3 megahertz up and a bunch of other antennas up there. I think they got a current antenna there, too, if I'm not mistaken, but that's one of the
Wow. And they
let people come there on certain occasions? Is it a ham radio club kind of, or who owns it, I wonder?
I don't know if they haven't brought that out or what, and they have a club there or whatever, but I mean, they used to.
Originally from Western Pennsylvania, so I never went to that high school, but that high school, that school is very close to my home, so we no doubt breathed some of the same air molecules along the way. I'm in CUSO with W1WCR in Hudson, New Hampshire also. I'll turn it over and let you speak to Vic. Vic, neutral beverage, and he years ago wrote his own book on beverage antenna designs, and I'm conversing with him about that. I use one of his designs. Go ahead, see if you can pick it up with Vic. There, Pete, over.
Okay, what was that call sign again?
Yes, it's W1WCR, Washington, Canada Radio. The name here is Vic, and you're putting in about an F5 signal here into Hudson, New Hampshire, which is right on the southern border of the state.
In about 35 minutes. Is it on this frequency?
39.
I was just wondering if somebody's net was starting up here. I see, that's all. By the way, this is the maiden voyage for a new antenna that I erected, and I would prefer to hear that I'm not giving you the world's greatest signal, because I'd like it if my signal were launching further, but maybe it's okay. I need to evaluate and find out what it is doing, you know, what is local coverage, and also you might comment on Pat. Pat and I are about a mile apart from each other, and we were doing comparisons with Vic, and I'll speak long enough here so you can maybe make an informed decision as to how the audio is and, you know, the general readability of the signal and so forth. And then maybe afterwards you can pass it back to Pat and do the same, and then we'll have something to compare it by. I hadn't put up an antenna in 20 years, and actually I have to give Pat the credit. He's the one who did it for me with the arm power, and also another fine friend, WB4AIO, who did a lot of brain work and also muscle work to boot. So those two did it for me a couple months ago. And this is the very first maiden voyage of the antenna, finally. Had to get an antenna tuner made first. So anyway, with that longer transmission, I'll turn it back to you, Pete, and hear what your comment is.
Well, I'll tell you what, it sounds like it's sitting right next door to me. The power is fantastic. About 20 over 9 here. I wish you could have whatever you've got, whatever you've done, is perfect right now. I'm just running an inverted gate here, so
okay, yeah. Now, Vic up in New Hampshire, he's known for giving people 40 overs, and he's already given me a 60 over here one Christmas. But anyway, let me send it to Pat, and Pat will talk. He's my neighbor, and we'll do a comparison, and we'll see what kind of signals we're giving to you. We've done this before in the past on 160, like with using 1 watt. We did once to some guy, and, you know, a certain time, and then we talk about it later as to why one of us or the other was more powerful. I was more powerful initially, and then Pat did something, and he became more powerful. And, well, anyway, let me send it straight to Pat. Pat, go ahead and pick it up with Pete, and we'll do a signal test.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Pete, I'm, I guess I'm about a mile there from Marty. And, I don't know, I'm probably running a little less power than he is, but my antenna's up there a little higher. That's what's it look like on your end there, K3PMC, KM2T.
Pushing on this watch, and I have that visible, so yeah,
good start there. There is a nice red deer too. A friend of mine picked one up there a couple months ago. And, they sound good, and they give you a lot of bang for the buck, that's for sure. Go ahead, Vic.
Okay, very good. I think I'm going to have to leave here. I've got stuff to do, and it's been very interesting, and I'll look forward to your QSL card there, Pete. And I think we'll pass along the Big 7 and the Little 3 for now. So back to Marty, N2IRJ from W1WCR.
Well, thank you very much, Vic. I appreciate your coming to evaluate the future LibertyNet antenna. I want to ask, do you think that it's ready? I mean, I have a few connections that need to be fixed before Saturday, but I can stay tuned to this frequency. I can move up and down probably 50, or excuse me, I can go up and up about 25 KC either way, and it's still within a 2-to-1 VSWR. So it's not too tight or anything. The Q, it's real nice, and it lets my belly get through uninhibited. I could run, you know, 30 KC easily. I could start up a radio station here, no problem. Anyway, eventually I'm going to obtain new gears and a new belt, and I'll be able to tune the thing anywhere. Right now there's some kind of a problem where the two roller inductors skip. They don't stay in phase with each other, so it becomes very tedious and difficult. You turn the crank on the one, and the other one seemingly is coming along, but it's really skipping teeth along the way. So it takes a long time to tune. That's why I'm kind of reluctant to move it anywhere, because it took me many hours to get it just tuned up for this frequency, which is the one we'll be using. So as long as I don't touch anything, I guess maybe I could take a risk and have to take that risk at some point and put it on the air, and maybe have they've been listening to a different antenna. Over.
Yes, well, it is, I believe it is definitely stronger than the previous antenna. And one of the things I like about it is that the signal strength is consistent. There's no fading that I've noticed. It's always in there.
That's another thing that the modeling suggested. Anything over 65 degrees, well, it just seemed that, well, I think that was the cutoff. There was good fill everywhere. There was good fill everywhere, and if I get it up to 60 feet, it's going to give me an extra 3 dB distance, and it's only going to hurt me a little bit locally. My signal will be more like TAT. Pete's reception of me will be less, but to you it will be similar, and for people out in, say, 7-land or 6-land, it will be more. So that's a good description telling me about the consistency, and we had suspected that with the fill being better at the various angles, that at least locally that's what would be observed. Okay, well, I'll let everyone say so long to you, Vic, and I'll probably pull the plug shortly thereafter. I just want to ask Pete a question before leaving, though. Pat, I'll turn it over to you, and then you can give it to Pete to say so long to Vic.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, 73, Vic, pleasure, and we'll have to look up that antenna there. I see a picture of it there. It's a big circle. It looks pretty neat. Anyway, 73, have a good day, and maybe we'll catch you here again around 160 there. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay,
thank you, Pete, and I'll let you say so long to Vic, and then I'll ask my question afterwards.
Yep, so long for now. See you later. possibly on the Liberty net.
I'll tell him about that. Transmitted in to IRJ, clear with EE1 ECR. Yeah, Pete, the Liberty net is a political recent events, current events, discussion net. I guess as the net goes on into the wee hours, it evolves into a roundtable where we talk about everything, you know, technical advances in science, and it's excellent. I have been involved in it, talking on it for about 22 years. I used to listen to it before that. It's the longest running consistent current events net on amateur radio. It originated in 1974. There were some others, but they never, you know, lasted the test of time. But anyway, Vic is the net controller. Our original frequency in 1974, up until maybe 10 years ago, was 3950, below where we are now. We're on 3967 lower sideband, and we used to use 3950, but unfortunately, there are some, it's a long story, but unfortunately, even though this is amateur radio, it's supposed to be full of good guys, there are a few that aren't, and there are a few that want to prevent us from having that network down there, so they typically get on frequency ahead of time each Saturday night to block them. So that's why we ended up, by default, kind of arriving on this frequency. But we're not necessarily bound to this frequency. We'll come here, but if somebody is using it, or if there's a nearby QSO, you know, it wouldn't be right for us to interfere with them. So we'll QSY to some other location. You know, we try to stay in the area to make it easy for people to find, but, you know, it might not be exactly this frequency, but for the last few weeks at least, it's fallen on here, or was it a PKC? So anyway, it's Saturday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Local Time. So since we're on daylight savings time now, it will start at 10 o'clock in the evening on Saturday night. I know that it sounds like a strange time to start a net, but it has to do with propagation. It goes into the wee morning hours, which is really hard on us all, you know, like 4 in the morning sometimes, or even later. In history, it's actually gone to daylight. But it's really exciting. Really smart minds get together and discuss vital issues of the time. One man owns radio stations through the Midwest. 9 SAM. He's a multimillionaire, and he, for years, used to report into us that, you know, he was traveling with one of the kings or princes or something like that over in the Middle East. And on his website, there are actually photographs of him with those men. And he also traveled with the big names on mainstream TV. But he'd say, okay, this is what you're going to hear on TV this week. But here's what actually happened. This isn't politically correct to be said on television, but here's really what happened. So that we would get the true story over shortwave radio. And for years, that was a real advantage. And of course, a lot of other people contribute in their individual ways too. So that's a short synopsis about the Liberty Net, Pete. Over.
Hi, it's Tom. Sounds very interesting, and I would love to try. And that I don't get the OMS net is on just about every night, but I don't log into that every night. USO all the time, and I'm not sure I really understand why, but they seem to place the Hawaii and the Jersey on the top of their list. But them all the time, but I being new, I like to move around different nets and things like that.
talk to you.
It's probably before your time when you lived in Bayville, but I'll say it anyway, and then I'll turn it over to Pat. The thing that I was going to tell you about, well, first let me finish about the LibertyNet. When you check into the LibertyNet, be prepared to wait a long time. So if you do, you know, don't get angry or upset. And if it's too long, you can just leave. No one will get angry with you. You don't have to formally check out or anything like that. Everybody stays friends. You can just come and go as you please. But anyway, he'll start checking people at 10 o'clock. Sometimes 11:30 before he gets around to you the first time. You know, it can get real packed. But anyway, as time goes on, it thins out, and the go-around time gets quicker and better and all that. But, you know, sometimes people talk on their soapbox a little on the long side, too. But we don't stop anybody. We let free speech roll. The question I was going to ask you about involves something maybe not so nice. In fact, I don't have to say maybe. It's not a nice subject. But it turns out that what I think is Bayville, I think of a court case that I was involved in. And this goes back probably, I don't know, 12 years. There was a boy, a young boy, who accidentally shot another boy with a gun. And I can't remember the name of the case. I remember the name of the defendant. It was Kowiatkowski. And anyway, I was one of the jurors on the case in Ocean County. And I was just wondering if you ever heard of that case, because being a small city, such a big event apparently down there, you know, you might have heard about it. Like I said, it might be going too far back. Over.
No, it is not going too far back. I was living very close to the area at the time, and had several good friends who both family and children involved.
Marty, I'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Incident.
Okay, Pat. Is over. The judge said it's perfectly fine. It's public knowledge. You can talk about it now as much as you want. So sometime, if you want, I could gladly discuss with you what really went on behind the scenes, what information we found out. Maybe you already knew. Maybe it was just withheld from us initially as jurors to be non-prejudicial. But I ended up caring a lot. I wanted to end up trying to help repair as much damage on all sides that was possible, but it was such a painful memory that the family I approached basically, you know, smiled, I guess, out of kindness, but they chose to never follow up on any of it. I offered to go to bat for them as a juror for the judge in terms of recovering property and so forth, and they never followed up on it, and that's the Kowiatkowskis. I actually, once again, it's a small world. I ran into them by accident. Actually, the wife. I was at the town hall here in Jackson, and I saw the man's name on the bulletin board, and it gave his address, and his address happened to be in Jackson. So I would have called, but there was no phone number, so I hated to stop by, but I ended up doing just that, and, you know, I ended up learning some more about the case, too. Probably what you know, since you said you knew the families, then you probably really know how awful the impact was. I mean, it was so awful that towards the end, people were turning on each other. I mean, during the trial, halfway through, one woman who was testifying on one side suddenly switched sides if she could just get off herself. And it really turned ugly. So I'm not hearing you very well, otherwise I'd even talk now, but I know you want to get to your other net as well, so I won't dwell on anything. But feel free to contact me anytime. My email address is on QRZ.com. It's my call sign at ARRL.net. And it would be fun to talk to you again. The conditions are getting worse, though. I'm having some trouble hearing you with your 100 watts. I'm not able to pull you out. It's in part due to the fact that I'm not hearing you on the same antenna that I'm transmitting on. You're hearing me on an antenna that is favorable for you to hear me, but I'm hearing you on a beverage antenna which is pointed towards California, so it's actually rejecting your signal. Now, you may ask, why don't I just push a button and put it the right direction? Well, I would, but I can't. It turns out that the transmit receive relay is broken in my amplifier, so I can't receive backwards through the amplifier. That might sound complicated, but long story short, there's a technical flaw here, and it won't let me do that right now. This is kind of an early test of this new antenna, and there are certain limitations. For example, early on, I was asked by Vic, do you have an AB switch? And that way we could make an instantaneous comparison between the two antennas, and I don't, which is kind of a silly thing to not have when you're evaluating a new antenna. You want to be able to switch back and forth easily to make a quick comparison, but I can't do that because I sort of jumped the gun. But at least I got on the air, and I got you to give a report along with the others, so I'm happy for that. So that's the story, Pete. I'll let you tie the ribbons on it. Pat said he had to step away for about 15 minutes, but I think I'm going to be gone as well, so when he comes back, he might find nobody here. But I'll turn it back to you, and if you can, talk really close and loud in your mic, and I'll hopefully hear you, or whatever you're saying at the end. Over.
Okay, right. I understand exactly where you are and what you're going through with this whole situation. And empathize with you completely. And I look forward to having a conversation a little bit more with you at another time. At this point, I'm going to say this to you. My wife just got back home. Pick it up at another time. So, 73 for now, and we'll catch you later on again. So,
Roger, Pete, it worked. You bridged the gap. The loudness, the clarity, the voice, it all made it. 73 to you and your wife. N2 IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey, clear with you.
Yeah, N2 RRJ, KWIK.
KWIK, hello, name is Marty, and I'm located in Jackson, New Jersey.
Hi, Marty. I just was reading the mail there, so I thought I'd say hello, because you got a very nice signal tonight in Salem, Ohio, and the name is Jerry. So I know you were going to take off, so I won't try to hold you, but it's a nice copy on you. Over.
Well, I appreciate that. Did you say the name is Jerry?
A QSL.
Okay, Jerry. Well, that's really the best thing you could have done, because this is the maiden voyage for this antenna. It's the first new antenna I've had in 20 years. And it's going to be used this upcoming Saturday for a net, and I needed to do a shakedown cruise, and we started about 45 minutes ago on this frequency, and we didn't get anybody as far west. You're the furthest western station, so that's important to know. On my old antenna, I know that I used to get into Ohio quite nicely, but it's good to know that this one is doing probably as well, and maybe hopefully even better. and I'm glad that you came in. The people that I know are kind of around Akron and so forth. I guess I could look on a map, but maybe you could tell me what part of Ohio you're in again, and your call sign again. I think it slipped my mind. KI something. Oh, well, back to you, Jerry.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in Salem, Ohio, not too far from Akron. About 35 miles east of Akron. And you're still making it the same part of the world, I guess. Name is Jerry, you've got that. Call it kilowatt 8 with heat height of kilowatt. And in New England, I think it's working fine. It'd be nice if you could freeze the ionosphere just for a few seconds and say, please don't do anything. let me experiment a little bit. I'm not using it right now, but I have a different, normally have a different system here. I usually transmit on two antennas at the same time. One rig I transmit with, generates the RF, and then I split it into two smaller signals, and then amplify those back up to about 100 watts, maybe a little more. Each one of those antennas, two different antennas. And I'm in the process of trying to, one of these days you start evaluating that and then adjust the, I want to adjust the phasing on the air. It's kind of like you were trying to do. Got a little technical problem. But anyway, you sound good over here in Salem. Over.
Roger on the Salem, Ohio. I just looked you up, and it says you're in at 737 Carriage Hill Drive. I'm a 22-bitter suite drive. I'm going to see if my mouse will let me see the map. Normally, this 27 megahertz mouse gets jammed by my transmissions. But guess what? For the first time, it's working. And the reason is this new antenna is mounted about 10 times further away from the house than my former antenna, which was just outside the window. So how about that? I just by accident in your presence found a new advantage already to this antenna. Yeah, there's going to be a little bit more loss, but I'm using homebrew ladder line instead of the coax, so that kind of compensates in the other direction. So overall, my loss is similar, and I'm having less RFI in the shack. And I'm looking here and seeing that the direct line of sight between us is said to be 344 miles, and the direct line kind of goes through Altoona, Pennsylvania, and Indiana, just north of Johnstown, and you're not too far. You're actually very close to the Pennsylvania line. I grew up, by the way, in western Pennsylvania, so we were once closer neighbors, and the city I came from was near Pittsburgh, called Johnstown. And the system you described is quite interesting about your combining the low signals. Are you using homebrew radios or something that you have the two lower signals to combine? I'm just wondering about that. Over.
Well, all it is a... I just took, I made a 50 to 25 ohm attenuator, okay? The goal of all this was for me to have, like, what you would call a system front end for my radio station, that this would never change. you know, how you always have to change antennas, you got to change the rig, you know, and all that monkey business. So what I wanted was something that represented front end, a console, if you will. And so what I do is I have some old tube equipment, and I run that into a dummy load, and I take that same RF and feed that into, well, there's a lot more switching and relays and all that. I mean, it sounds simple, but there's a lot of monkey business to go with it, but nothing theoretically very complicated. But anyway, I split that off into two. Since I got a 50 to 25 ohm attenuator, then I can drive two 50 ohm loads equally. If the you know, they're both 50 ohm input, and that all works out. But anyway, I will eventually have a, I'll be transmitting with a horizontally polarized and a vertically polarized antenna at the same time. That's one of the goals. Also found out that two antennas can add, you know, can add signal strength at the far point, but they also can subtract. So that's pretty cool. Give me your name again and give me your call so I can write it down. Over.
Yes, indeed, that is neat. And you could play with all kinds of things, like circular polarization and, well, everything in between there, you know, elliptical, right-hand or left-hand circular. Well, anyway, I'll give you my call sign again gladly, and that way maybe we could communicate again. And quite often I'm up on this frequency Saturday nights, like 10 o'clock Saturday night. The LibertyNet is around here. Not necessarily on this exact frequency, but somewhere in the vicinity. And the call sign is November 2, India, Romeo, Juliet, N2IRJ. And my name is Marty, and I'm located in the central part of New Jersey. Its name is Jackson, New Jersey, the name of the city. It's in the largest county in New Jersey, which is called Ocean. So that's Marty and Smart. If you want, you can email me too. And an easy way to remember is the call sign ARRL, you know, the American Radio Relay League, just N2IRJ at ARRL.net, and that'll get to me, and then I can get back to you, and it'll be a happy world. And speaking of getting back, it's possible that Pat might have returned by now. I did want to try to hang out for 15 minutes until he returned, and to not have him show up handed because I was clearing out, but fortunately he came back, and now Pat might be back. So let me flip it over and see, are you there, KN2T? Okay, I'm talking to Jerry out in Ohio. I don't know if you're copying that, if you'd like to say hi to Jerry, and then I was going to be clearing out myself, Pat, but I didn't want to clear out until you got there.
Yeah, okay, I'll say good evening to Jerry. Name here is Pat, and we're located about a mile from Marty here in Jackson, New Jersey. Call us KN2T.
Hello, Jerry.
Hey,
okay, Pat, I copy you fine. Might not be quite as strong as Marty, but glad to run into you, and your thing's fine. And as Marty said, I'm in Salem, Ohio, which is not too far from the Pennsylvania border, and about 70 miles due west of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Over.
Okay, you've been doing well here. You're about 30 over 90 from here
ago. Okay. Well, I've just run 100 watts here into dipole antenna right now, but so nothing too remarkable. I got an L4B. I got some issues. I've got to work on that someday, and I got to make some other, you know, got to do something with my antennas, some other things. But yeah, I'm just running barefoot there, Pat. Over.
Okay,
Nice to have that, especially when conditions are not good enough. You can hear the static crashes, but I'm hearing you and Marty just fine through the crashes. You're well above the noise for me on that. Everything okay over there yet, Marty? Over.
Yes, Jerry, except the static crashes. K8WIK, this is N2IRJ. Last night it was the same thing. The static crashes were terrible. And I stayed up last night trying to get someone to come back to me on this frequency to test the FM for the first time. And I didn't get anybody until almost daybreak. Believe it or not, the static chased everyone in. And finally, I don't know, maybe 5 in the morning, my net started 3KC above here, and then eventually, maybe an hour and a half or two later, the net started exactly on this frequency, the graveyard net. And anyway, what happened was a big storm came through, and it was thundering. It was really loud thunder. So I stayed on the air anyway, and then it passed, and it took the static with it. It was miraculous. I mean, normally, you know, the static's still going to stay around, and, you know, many hundreds of miles or further even. But the static was quick to dissipate. I guess daylight had something to do with it, too. But by 10 o'clock, there was no static whatsoever. So tonight is a replay of last night. Whether or not we'll get the rain again, I don't know. But anyway, Pat, the person you're speaking with is the closest amateur radio operator to my house. He's less than a mile away here, air distance, and I know he doesn't want me to advertise, but I'll say this, at least he is responsible for my signal. He built this station to a large extent, so the good signal that I'm putting out is by his hand. So anyway, his system is designed to launch a signal probably further if you were in California, maybe, or Arizona. We still have to do that test to find out. But then again, maybe this new antenna he put up for me is actually working better, you know, efficiency-wise. I don't know. See, I'm running open wireline in homebrew, and he's not. He's running the store-bought stuff. So his antenna is higher than mine. Ultimately, I would like to get my antenna up to where his is. But right now my trees just wouldn't cooperate, so we couldn't do that. So technically, people like you who are closer will hear me better because my antenna's lower and I'm favoring local coverage, whereas his higher antenna will, in theory, favor longer coverage. Although with all the static, we haven't had anybody that far away yet to tell us which antenna's working better. That's yet to come. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, and then you can pass it back to Pat, and I guess then I'll be tying the ribbons on it. So back to you, Jerry.
It is EFP.
Okay, I guess there's a breaker station in there. You want to go ahead, breaker, over?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. This is Joe, Kilo Delta 8, Foxtrot Bravo. Just wanted to jump in on your signal report there, Marty. I'm in Mentor, Ohio, about 28 miles east of Cleveland, and you're coming in here, you're moving in here, and it's 30 over.
Well, thank you very much. That's very helpful. I received your suffix, PFB, but I didn't get the beginning or your name. Over.
The beginning is Kilo Delta, number 8, above Foxtrot Bravo. And the name is Joe, Juliet Oscar.
Did you say it's in Bravo or Tango? I missed that. Very good, Joe. KD8PFB. This is N2IRJ. Well, I'm amazed to hear the 30 over, but I'm happy. And you're now maybe the westmost station just before this. It was Jerry. That's as far west as we got so far in our test. So thanks for giving the signal report. I appreciate that.
Have a great evening at Sherbo.
You have a great evening, too. And as to not be rude, let me ever so quickly pass it to Pat so he can at least say hello and goodbye. Over to you, Pat.
Yeah, okay, KDH, Papa Fox Bravo, KM2T, Kilowatt, November, 2 Tango. Name here is Pat, and we're located, I guess, a little less than an air mile from Marty here in Jackson, New Jersey. And you're 5 and 9 plus here. You got my signal here. Go ahead.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Pat. I'm running just a 104-foot dipole. It looks like a squirrel got ran over by a truck. But I got some reason to get it up in there. But it's good to know that I'm going to get it up in there. Okay. Have a great evening, gentlemen. And the fellows out there, K8I, down in Dale, Jim, great.
Yeah, Joe, before you go, what kind of a signal am I giving you out there, Joe? Go ahead.
You're running on 20 over
between the settings. Okay, real fine. All right, 7-3, and nice hearing you on 80 meters. KD8, Papa Fox Bravo, KN2T.
Yeah, we do have an antenna difference than Pat. It's like that other experiment we made on 160 meters with a guy in Pennsylvania, because it can't be power a 10 over compared to a 30. It's got to be antenna directionality.
No, I don't think it's the antenna, Marty. You got to try to test it 100 watts, not the power levels we're running. It's not really a fair test, you know.
Well, it turns out that it would take a difference of 20 dB of power, and there's no way, unless you turned your power off. Are you back to 20 watts?
No, I'm not. I'm running the amplifier.
Okay, so you have a kilowatt, so I would need 10,000 to get 10 more dB than 100,000. I need 100,000 watts, which I don't have.
No, I don't believe so. If you want, we could try it at 100 watts.
Unfortunately, I'd have to go to the basement and disconnect things and put a jumper in and all that happy noise. But yes, we could do that in the future. We could one night just do it barefoot and see what we can come up with.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair test, you know. I mean, we really don't know where we're on a peak here with these amplifiers anyway, so that's the best thing to do is you just do it barefoot and see how they perform, you know?
Yeah. Say one thing, it sounds like your toils did pay off, and also some of my ideas couldn't have been all that wrong, even though those coils can take a lot of current, that's for sure. That's really a beautiful piece of machinery I have to tune the antenna with, but you sure made me happy camper, Pat.
Yeah, well, it's working. It ought to be interesting to see Saturday how you make out, you know. Is Jerry still in there, or did he sign?
No, I'm still here. I've just read the mail.
Yeah, okay, Jerry. I don't want to leave you out there. Go ahead, pick it up.
And Marty's signal is a little stronger than yours, Pat, but I'm not sure just how much what the difference was, but it's probably around 5 dB or so. Your 5 dB may be 100 more, but everything's good here. Over?
Yeah, real fine. Real fine. You say you're running 100 watts there?
Yes, 100 watts.
Yeah, you hit the 20 over mark here on this transceiver anyway. So you're doing pretty good there. Well, what kind of antenna do you have up?
Well, 75 meter dipole, but it's a 75. It's two 75 meter dipoles in series. Over.
Yeah, okay, we're fine.
How do you have it up, Jerry?
About the low point is 40 feet, and the ends are probably up another 10, something like that. Over.
How many feet total?
40 feet at the center and 50 feet at the ends. Over.
Oh, okay. You're sagging because of the feed line, right?
Correct. Yeah. And then the trees. I got tree problems, so. But mostly, yeah, it's the coax.
Yeah,
I'm sort of supporting two pieces of coax off of this.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Well, you got it in a good spot there anyway. It's doing a good job.
I got a lot of weight pulling down on it, but that's approximately it. And the bearing of the antenna is 30 degrees off of north, east, you know, it's about 30 degrees. So that's basically the direction of the antenna. Over.
Yeah, okay, real fine. Well, you must have it in the right place. It's working pretty good for you.
Okay, well, sometime I'll get on here and